there's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200K for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does all the work for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billing, scheduling, and more. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. Visit Picasso to see thousands of listings. That's PACASO.com.
Sexton trying to get loose. He'll fire.
He knocks it down.
But Carl slammed it home. Garland upstairs.
Oh!
Sexton inside. Oh! A thunderous dunk.
And Allen blocked the shot at the rim.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Cavs media family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. The Cleveland Cavaliers got revenge against the Chicago Bulls before the Charlotte Hornets got revenge against the Cavs. The same Charlotte Hornets that just lost to the Chicago Bulls that the Cavs just beat the night before, and the entire season of weirdness continues. The home and road struggles continue for the Cleveland Cavaliers, but we have so much good stuff to talk about. Young players playing out of their minds lately, and I could not be more excited to have my co-host back today, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. Thank you for covering for me while I was out. Though I was able to, do a little video cut of the pod, I was not free to talk because I had a sleeping baby, and we were well past pod hours in the Rodriguez household. So thank you very much for your coverage and for your service as always. It was a great pod with Jason. It is funny, especially when I do sit out on a pod and we are talking to someone who covers another team. Like, there's always something we can take away and connect to our current experience, mm-hmm. Like where the Bulls are, the decisions they've made, and how that should inform the decisions we want the front office to make. It all is connected, like team build. Like, it's just funny because no team is really that far off in terms of comparable situations. So it was a really, really fun listen, and I appreciated you covering without me.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, and I think what you're pointing out is a good thing, which is basically the intention of when we have guests on and people that cover other teams is we try to let people know how there's similarities between teams, get a better appreciation for what's going on, and especially in a year like this year where the Cavs are now 5 games out of the play-in spot, unlikely to get that. There's always kind of parallels and things that we can learn from other teams. And I think that that's something that we always try to do, because when you're in this kind of limbo spot where now we're kind of waiting for next year, you want to find other things to talk about, other angles to analyze this team. And sometimes that the lens that a fan of another team can provide is really valuable. But because you weren't here, we got a pretty big stretch of games where we haven't got any Carter takes recently. So I want to get your thoughts on kind of how the Cavs have played over the last week, just because I haven't talked to you a whole lot, even off podcast, about what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like the Darius thing is just getting more and more real, doesn't it? Obviously, I think I'm in a weird spot with this team right now from the perspective of, on one hand, they're losing games I really wish they would win. I think they've lost a lot of games that I remember early in the season we were kind of talking about games where we were saying kind of you know, there were games where the Cavs fandom at large would say they should win games, and they were might win games. Mm-hmm. I think we've had quite a few should win games as of late that have not turned into those. You know, where I would say the Cavs should be favored, especially in, you know, given circumstances, and so they're losing, so that's frustrating. But I am seeing some really, really good stuff at an individual level, especially from Darius. So I don't know. I'm kind of in the middle ground. Where are you feeling?
Yeah, I would describe them as could win games. I wouldn't say should, just because when you're dealing with a team that is this young, predicting any sort of consistency is difficult. But at the same time, the really interesting thing
can I push back real quick though?
Go ahead.
I think if you were to press the players, they would say they were should win games.
Well, I mean, that should be their mentality. Like, they should believe that they are a playoff team, that they should win these type of games. Anyone that's within kind of their weight class, they should feel that way, because approaching things with that mentality, when you come up short, it becomes instructive. It lets you know where you can improve. There's always things that you can take away, and that's always been why I've advocated for trying to go for the play and for trying to win every single game, because as much as this team looks good when everything's clicking, you're not going to get that consistently on a night-to-night basis. But what I do find interesting about this recent stretch is the most consistent performers on the Cavs right now are the young guys. Darius Garland, Colin Sexton, even Isaac Okoro is playing really well for his standards on both ends of the floor. The defense is obviously, it's improving consistently. You love what you're seeing out of Okoro on that end of the floor, but the offense, he's becoming a little more confident. Jared Allen, I thought that last game was a step in the right direction for him.
Definitely.
You're still seeing just a little slower reaction time, especially on defense. The rotations are a little late. He took responsibility for the Cavs not getting defensive rebounds against Charlotte, which ultimately I think cost them the game. But for the most part, he's performing better. But Kevin Love, Matthew Dellavedova, Larry Nance, those guys aren't performing at the standard that they're accustomed to, and you can see the frustration from those guys. But to me, the most important guys for them to play well is the young core. And those guys are performing at a really high level. And that makes me really excited about the future.
Yeah, I think that's probably why I'm not as salty. You know, I did think they had a chance to really insert themselves into the play-in conversation. And, you know, I think we can pretty safely say statistically it's going to be a real challenge at this stage. Like, I don't think, you know, I don't think that's any breaking news to say that, you know, this team probably wasn't able to make that push. You know, the losses to the, you know, the empty Detroit team and the Bulls just kind of made it a big challenge. So, you know, like, what are we looking for down the end of the stretch? I mean, that, you know, when I was trying to think about kind of what this episode should be, it should really be what's worth valuing and what's not worth valuing as we kind of wrap here. And I think you're right. I do think it is in observing the young guys and kind of figuring out how they're doing. Like, obviously, Darius is starting to have a moment, I think, nationally. I think people are starting to notice. Zach Lowe mentioned him. Jackson Frank has been doing a lot of really, really good work talking about his skill set. I think Sexton's been really, really good as of late. I feel like the jumper is starting to get there again, and his off-ball cutting is still there. You know, really, not that you want to be the kind of person to pin losses on individuals, but, you know, I really think the power forward position is really kind of letting the team down right now, you know, and not necessarily through, you know, Larry's obviously still coming off of his you know, pretty severe illness, and Kevin's clearly still kind of finding his way back to, you know, consistent day-to-day game shape, because there are moments where Kevin like unlocks everything, and then there are moments where Kevin looks stiff, and if the jumper's not going, then it's just not worth it, you know, the juice isn't worth the squeeze. So, you know, like, the fact that that's the case, you know, those are people I'm more likely to you know, kind of think are going to be reliable. So I don't know, man. I kind of find myself in no man's land here with this team. But the Darius emergence is sure a nice consolation prize to the play-in race.
Yeah, I was actually going to talk about Darius a little later in the podcast, but I think we just got to do it on the front end. He's a franchise point guard. The Cavs have drafted a star. Darius Garland is that star. He is the player that I thought he was going to be. I was hoping for steps towards this season, and right now it looks like the breakout is occurring. He is the player that he was profiled to be in the draft. He is playing at a ridiculously high level. You look at his last 9 games since that his slow performance against Miami, and you're looking at 23 points per game, 7 assists a game, true shooting percentage of 62%. And he's doing that while Sexton is averaging 27-4 over that stretch. This is significant. What Darius Garland is doing right now is significant. What Sexton's doing is significant. And I think people got to get on the bandwagon now, because getting a player that is special like Darius Garland is a huge deal for a franchise. Now, people might argue, well, is he good enough to be the best player on a championship team? There are those arguments about Damian Lillard. Darius Garland is good enough to elevate this team to a consistent playoff team that is interesting, that is fun to watch, because that's what franchise point guards do in this league. You can have arguments about other positions and whether or not a guard can be the best player to win on a championship team, but I have to believe that this team is going to be rounding the corner, because he is that kind of special, and I am just thrilled to see that it is actually materializing at this point.
So what I'd like to kind of just ask is, like, do we think that this is for sure, you know, happening? Like if we were to kind of evaluate his recent run, which is now going a month strong, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, how much of that is sustainable? And what is encouraging, and I get myself in trouble with this all the time, just saying that good stuff is sustainable and bad stuff isn't. But, like, you know, like I look at what he's doing, and really he's not finishing at a crazy high rate. He's definitely, I feel like, figured out better angles that have a higher degree of success around the rim. Mm-hmm. For example, like not as many crazy English finishes that are, you know, that... He ain't quite Kyrie, let's just say that much, in terms of, yeah, you know, putting spin on the ball on the way up, on attacking the basket. But, like, it feels like he's kind of getting his layups off, like, just, like, a little bit earlier, but not quite in floater range, where mm-hmm. before the defense really is in his grill, he's able to kind of just gently kiss it off the backboard. So I feel like that is just progression, as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. And then... Really, he's taking a lot of threes and he's making them,
he's taking 7 threes a game over this 9-game stretch where he's playing really well. And I love the comment. I don't know if you saw this. JB Bickerstaff said after the game that he is trying to get Garland to take 8 to 10 threes a game. That is kind of the goal that he's setting for him. And to me, like, that's where you look at this and say, is it sustainable? Yes, his shot profile can get better than it is right now. He has a really effective pull-up, and he's still, even with him taking 7 threes a game over this stretch, he is leaving threes on the table. There are still opportunities for him to take more shots that he's getting himself open, but because he's such a talented passer and he's a pass-first player just by nature, he wants to get into the lane and cause the defense to react to him so he can create an opportunity for other guys. But he's starting to understand, as his scoring's going up, his assist rate is going up, and he's creating these opportunities by his assertiveness. And now that it's clicking, like, that's the whole equation. That's what we were worrying about earlier in the season, was it, does he have the mindset to unlock this aspect of the game? Because the talent is there. So you ask if this is sustainable. I'm willing to bet on it. Like, I think that this is absolutely sustainable and that he can improve from here. As he gets stronger, as he becomes more mature, I think the sky's the limit for him as a point guard.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, I don't know about the sky being the limit. You know, I think that he still profiles as a very good starting point guard. I don't know if he profiles as an uber elite point guard at the top end.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, and this is, you know, to your point, and maybe we're strawmanning a little bit, or, you know, we're arguing against an argument that's not being made yet. Like, no one's here saying Darius isn't a champ. You know, Darius can't be the best player on a championship team. Like, we're not having those arguments yet, but I'm sure we will. And like, my point has always been regarding this, like, just get good players and be good, be as good as you can. And like, we'll figure out if you can win a championship later. But you know, like, ultimately, like, I'm just really, really encouraged. I mean, the control of the game is really, really there in terms of kind of, like, you feel him on every play. And I remember we said that last year. It's just like, he's good at the little stuff, but he's just not, there's no impact.
Yeah.
And like this year, it just feels like you feel him every time he's out there. And then every time he's not out there. And that might be also a byproduct of our backup point guard play right now. But like, you know, like, ultimately it's like Darius, like, really makes you kind of feel his impact out there. And everything seems to kind of slot into place, including, as we've mentioned, for Colin Sexton, who is just feasting right now as an off-ball guard.
Yeah, he's absolutely feasting, and both with Darius and with Delly. Like, I have to correct something that I tweeted out the other day, because I had tweeted that Delly's always been a plus-minus god, and this year he hasn't been that. I pulled up the numbers because I was looking to kind of back that statement. And Delly and Sexton have 117.1 offensive rating when they're on the floor together, and that feels impossible.
I you know, Zach Lowe mentioned in his 10 things column that it might be time to move Delly off the rotation. I don't agree. I really don't.
Dude, that was actually going to be in my show notes. That was going to be in my show notes that, hey, I want to see some point Jetty. Maybe start with Delly, but if things aren't clicking in the second half, get Jetty a few more touches. Try to run that out. I know people aren't going to like that, but that was kind of my thought. And then I go and I try to look up the numbers to kind of get some statistical backing for this. And that duo has been more effective. And even though Delly isn't playing well, Sexton is playing so well alongside him that it's lifting up that lineup. Like, they only have a negative 1.9 net rating together. And like,
here's my thing on the Delly front. The reality of the situation is Delly is not currently good enough to be the team's backup point guard of the long term.
Yeah,
I think we all know this. I think if this front office isn't looking hard at a very, very capable playmaker, get you into your offense backup point guard this offseason, I think they're making a mistake. With that said, Delly out there at backup point guard, as compared to any other options on the roster, whether it's Damian Dotson when healthy, Point Jetty, going uber big with these Dean Wade, Larry Nance at the three lineups.
Which
I love, but you can kind of shift everyone down in those. When Delly's out there, the offense looks closer to what I think this team's offense should look like. Because he's a ball mover. He gets the team into their sets appropriately. The dumbest play in NBA history, which is Colin Sexton in the corner, flashes out and then cuts in. And no, like, kind of a screen is set, but Delly finds him for a layup every single time. Like, you know, it's a nothing play, but just by having a real point guard that can read and hit players in time and on target. I'm not saying Delly is a superstar. I'm not saying he's even a good backup point guard, but for this roster and what they have constructed, I don't see a better alternative to play right now. It's not like you have, you know, like, let's say Dylan Windler was available, and you can say, hey, we can just upsize, but and we'll get extra shooting with Dylan.
Yeah.
You know what? You don't have that. You don't have Torian Prince. So you can either play Lamar Stevens, who is a power forward, and slot everything down to accommodate that, or you can just play Delly, who gets your best scorer in a position to succeed pretty consistently. And we know it doesn't work that well if Colin doesn't have someone to get him in a position to succeed consistently.
Yeah, like, yeah, we have a pretty significant sample size of Sexton with the bench, because Sexton plays all those backup 2 minutes. Yeah. He plays all those bench minutes. We know how much that lineup has struggled in the past.
It stagnates. So, you know, like, obviously, like, as we've said 500,000 billion times, the ultimate panacea for this team's offense in the long term is a big playmaking wing, because then you can still play Sexton at backup one and have someone else still run the offense. until that happens, I'm sorry. You got to play Delly. And like, I think JB agrees because Delly is pretty firmly in this rotation right now. And I, and you know, it's funny because Lowe, and I don't know if Lowe meant this. So, you know, I'm doing a little speculating, but he kind of mentioned that Delly has like championship cachet in Cleveland. And like, I don't think JB cares about that. You know, like JB wasn't on this team when they won a title. So like, I think JB is just like, I got a guy who can run some offense.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to get to play.
And the funny thing is, and this is kind of a trend I've noticed throughout the season, but there have been things that I've thought. So as an example, let's play some point Jetty, because when you're looking at Delly, he is not a threat to score right now. It deems, now that he's kind of firmly in the rotation and there's once again some film on him, teams are kind of helping off of him and not treating him as seriously. But the lineup data supports that this is something that's working, like that the offense is working. It's elevating Sexton, which I think is the most important thing with those bench minutes, is you want to have someone that gets Sexton going because he's going to elevate that, right? You know that Darius can make it work with the starters when Sexton subs out at the start. That is a rotation that's working really well. And even like the lineup data always seems to support the decisions that are being made. Even people that have called for Okoro and Prince to start, for example, because, hey, we have two small guards that are being beat at the point of attack. You look at the lineup data, Garland, Okoro, and Prince has a worse defensive rating than Garland, Sexton, and Okoro. Like, everything seems to line up, and there's things that seem intuitive and they sound smart, but when you actually do the investigation of what those lineups have been, it does seem like this coaching staff is following what statistically makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned, like, and like, that's why, like, and I'm starting to see maybe some grumbles about JB among certain sects of the fan base.
Yeah.
And I think it's just, I just think they're bummed that they're not winning enough or as much as they thought they would.
Right. And that's, you know, that's normal, right?
Coach is always the easiest thing, especially when, you know, when your young players are putting up numbers like Garland and Sexton and you're still losing. So it's like, so what must be the problem? Mm-hmm. So it's either Kevin Love gets a lot of hell or the coaching staff gets a lot of hell. And like, you know, like ultimately the reason I'm still on JB is, everyone loves him. I think someone mentioned recently that Torian Prince said JB was the best coach he's ever had. Wow. That guy's bounced around. You know, and maybe I'm misquoting. I, you know, don't.
I missed that one, so I can't support you. You might just be lying through your teeth right now.
I believe it was an Angel Gray tidbit on the broadcast, but any early broadcast Cavs, I'm listening in kind of one ear because I'm also chasing Millie around at that point. But you know, like, players seem to love him. And then the stuff that the Cavs don't do that bum me out, they know it and are working on it, you know? Like I don't think it would be fair for us to throw the hissy fits we were throwing about the three-point attempts early in the year and not note that not only has it happened at a way better rate, but also that all the on-record messaging from the coaching staff has been more. Give us more. I mean, you just mentioned JB pointing to the fact that he wants Darius taking 8 to 10 a game.
And he said earlier in the year that he wants Sexton to take 7.
Yeah. So like, I don't know, man, I feel like stuff is pushing in the right direction here. And like, we just have to be okay with inconsistency because this is a team that, by the way, like, they're going to lose games when they have one healthy wing that they trust.
Yeah.
One, they have exactly one healthy wing that they trust. And he's 20 years old.
Honestly, this feels like a more macro example of what I was talking about last year, where the flashes from Garland made me think, hey, once his athleticism comes back, once he's had an offseason of training and he gets his strength up, it's going to unlock things. He's going to be able to get where he wants to on the floor and he can create for himself and others. That's what I'm seeing with the Cavs right now. Like, I think that there's good process there. Larry, like, it's funny looking at Larry. Like, he's clearly really frustrated with himself because his body just can't do the things he's used to as he tries to get back into shape. But even like Kevin Love, you can tell he's frustrated because he knows he can contribute at a higher level. But even his mere presence out there is making a huge difference. you look at since he came back, and this is really convenient because his first game back was April 1st. So you look at the month of April, the Cavs currently have a 111.5 O rating in April. That's really good. Since he came back in April, 39.4% of the Cavs' attempts are coming from behind the arc. The process is there. They are doing the right things. The results just aren't there yet. And it just gives me reason to believe that this group of really hardworking guys, because Garland, Sexton, and Okoro are getting better throughout the season, and that isn't true of every player. Most of these guys need off seasons. It is clear that from a film study and from a workout and training standpoint, these guys are dedicating themselves to their craft. You have to imagine that after an off season, after the talent increases, these guys get a little bit older, which isn't a sexy thing to say, that it's all trending in the right idea, that in the right direction, that they have the right idea of what needs to be done. And that gives me confidence. Like, I wasn't meaning to strawman earlier when I was saying whether or not Garland could be the best player on a championship team, because it's not an argument I'm seeing. But at the same time, I've been someone that consistently believes that a guard can't be that player. But that doesn't matter, because the Cavs drafted fifth. They drafted eighth when it was Sexton. They drafted fifth when it was Okoro. There's nobody I'm pulling my hair out about, for the most part here, that they could have taken in those spots. Like, yes, Shea would have been nice, but there's a bunch of context there. I'd probably take Shea second overall in a redraft, but Sexton has far exceeded my expectations, and there's so much reason to be excited about him, and he's got this connection with the team. He's a believer in J.B. Bickerstaff. Him and Garland get along incredibly well. They're wearing the same damn shoes every single game. He's close with Okoro. Like, it really does feel like there's something special with this young group and the way they connect with one another.
Yeah, and, you know, ultimately, again, just keeping going back to the fact that they're not winning games that we were hoping they would win when they got healthy, I think you said something really smart when you said, you know, I don't think they were as healthy as they thought they were, you know? And through no fault of their own, I mean, Kevin is obviously not ready to consistently contribute at a high level every night, mm-hmm. Physically. I don't know when that's going to come back, but it's not there right now. Yeah. Jarrett is averaging, in the month of April since he came back, he's averaging half a block a game. This is a dude who averages two blocks a game, consistently, and is one of the best help defenders in the league. Not really there right now. You know, Larry, I think, is having a really, really rough time from the field right now, as a scorer, and is not as impactful as he normally is defensively. So, you know, I don't know, man. I just think, like, the kids are all right. And while that's the case, it's really hard to get too worked up.
It really is. And, like, I'm already kind of shifting to the point after they lost the game to Detroit. There was a mental shift for me where I'm just watching play by play. I'm barely even, like, I'm keeping track of the score, obviously, because I'm watching a live game. But for the most part, like, I just want to see possession by possession, are guys getting better? If they make a mistake, how do they bounce back from that? And the really refreshing thing for me is, Carter, we usually, like, that's week two of the season that we have to make this adjustment on the podcast. The fact that they were in it for this long, that
I mean, and that also, let me quickly devil's advocate. There didn't used to be a play-in tournament.
Right.
Either.
There didn't used to be a play-in, and you look at the teams that are struggling, like Toronto, Washington, all these good teams, like, it's just such a weird year. So, like, whatever the reasoning for it, whatever the reasoning is, I'm still grateful that that's been the case, because these games are so important to the development. Like, I really strongly believe that having this stretch competing against these teams that are really trying to win is great for them. And even looking at the next two games against Washington and Toronto, that's prime development opportunity. Though you get to play spoiler against teams that really, really want to win. And it's, as I've said before, that's the closest thing to a playoff atmosphere that a lot of these guys have had. And I just think it's really important when you want to take that step forward next season that you maximize every single one of these minutes. And I'm interested to see how J.B. Bickerstaff approaches this and the rest of the coaching staff, because it is natural for guys to feel a little discouraged, to feel bummed out that they're outside of that play-in spot. But the consistent effort that we've seen out of this team, the buy-in that we've seen throughout this season, is a really, really good sign, because they are clearly focused on the process and not letting the results get them down, because there are so many stretches this season that would have broke this team in the past, and we're just not seeing that.
Well, and here's the thing. You can honestly kind of just take it even beyond the kind of the nebulous, should they, you know, let's see if they'll keep trying kind of energy, and into like, you know, are they incentivized to keep trying? You know, like you look at the current lotto odds right now, and the Cavs are pretty firmly in that sixth spot, mm-hmm. you know, because frankly, even if they were to kind of shut it down, I find it very unlikely that they jump higher than Houston, Minnesota, Detroit, Orlando in the standings. And OKC is kind of intentionally free falling.
You don't have to whisper that. They shut down Al Horford. They took a crowbar to my boy Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. They massacred my boy. Lou Dort goes off for 40 plus points, and they say that his shoulder's hurting. This joke, I'm going to steal it. I think it was the Hoop Collective that said it, but they could have at least done us the courtesy and said it was his shooting shoulder that was sore after the game, because that would have been hilarious. Lou Dort goes for 42 and his arm falls off. Like that would have been great. I hope it was Hoop Collective. And I'm crediting the right spot, but overall, like I think your point.
So you're not catching these teams in the odds to try to go get a better pick,
mm-hmm. and Sacramento plays OKC three times.
Exactly, I was about to get there. You beat me to the punch, and I think it was actually your tidbit. So I was just going to steal your crap anyway.
Yeah.
But you know, you look at Sacramento, Toronto, Chicago, desperately trying to win games.
Yeah.
And Sacramento is probably the only one that isn't in that field. And again, they're playing a team that is actively, you know, trying to lose on purpose three times. Mm-hmm. So with only 3 weeks left in the season, I want to say it's 13 games left.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. You're pretty much where you're going to be. So if I'm the Cavs and I'm the coaching staff, I'm going to say, listen, guys, everyone that is worth, you know, that is worth, you know, a damn in this organization is around for the long time. We actually are finally at the point where we don't have a bunch of transient players that are just getting ready to move on to their next team. Mm-hmm. Like let's just run through it real quick. Darius around for the, you know, ideally for the next several years. Mm-hmm. Colin about to hit an extension year, but very much incentivized to play well. Isaac incentivized to keep growing. Kevin locked in. Jarrett looking down the barrel of a big old payday to stay with this team.
Yeah.
Even on the bench, Dean Wade locked in. Lamar Stevens locked in.
Hartenstein playing for a contract.
Hartenstein playing for a contract. Like, everyone's incentive should still be to play well. And I think the Cavs would be, you know, are well served to know that, you know, they can, like, this roster can kind of know that, like, hey, we can try to win as many games as we want down the stretch. Mm-hmm. Like, there should be no, you know, organizational hand looking down on them saying, hey guys, maybe start shutting that down, you know, like, because they're kind of where they are. You know, I don't think you're gonna out tank OKC even if you try, so just play the best you can the rest of the way, so you can, because this whole course coming back next year, so if that is the case, get as, you know, as many reps as you need to be the best team you can be next year, because next year, I think we're both very of the opinion that they really need to be aiming for a playoff spot.
Yeah, I think they're getting it. Like, I don't care where they draft. I think where they draft is going to determine kind of what maybe the potential ceiling is. Like, I now feel like they have a franchise point guard and a franchise center, and Colin Sexton is playing like an all-star. So you add another star to that mix, or a potential star, that might raise kind of your ceiling as a team. But like, even looking through, like I've now started diving into reading scouting reports and watching film on these guys. Like, even if you're picking later, like, there's a lot of really good options that address a lot of needs in this draft, deep into this draft.
Highly recommend people, if you're tuning into this one, go back and listen to our podcast with Kevin O'Connor, where we talked about the young core and how a lot of these, a lot of players, both in the top tier and even in the second and third tiers of this draft, could really, really help the Cavs. Justin, I know you've got Scotty Barnes fever.
Oh, my God. This has been my Scotty Barnes week. Last week, I was watching a lot on Moody. This week has been Barnes. And my God, like just imagining a forward tandem of him and Okoro just like shutting people's water off gets me so damn excited. But I just think that after last season and the way that it was cut short unexpectedly, this team knows what they lost. They know what they lost in terms of developmental minutes. And like, you got really competitive guys that want to consistently get better. You see even play to play, like when Garland makes a mistake, he's like, he laughs it off. But at the same time, like you can tell he's getting a little annoyed with himself. He tries to pull off something else the next time down the floor. Like these guys are self-motivated. And that is just like, it's a great job by the team identifying these type of guys. But I think your point is accurate. Like, I think you're on the money here that they're incentivized to just focus on development, to keep trying down the stretch. And I hope that that's the case because there's only 13 games left, man. Like, I'm going to be really bummed out when we don't have Cavs games to talk about, when I don't have Cavs games to watch. So I want every single one of these to count because two of those 13 are in the next 2 days. Like, that sucks. I'm not ready for this to be over, man, especially with how exciting these young guys are playing. Like, Garland and Sexton right now, I just don't think you can overstate how significant what they're doing is. And credit to our friend of the podcast, Evan Dammerall, Locked On Cavs. Make sure you guys are checking out and supporting them. He tweeted out last night that he's talked to people around the league that said, hey, if Darius Garland played a full season at Vanderbilt, he would have been in contention for number two overall. Like, he would have been right there giving John Morant a run for his money. And you may have a preference between John Garland, but I think that it's almost a safe bet that that's actually going to be a conversation moving forward, that that is going to be a debate. He is at that level. And that's the most important thing, because a franchise point guard, a star point guard, raises your floor. You can talk about if it gets you over the hump, but it is one of the most essential things because there is so much talent in the league when it comes at the point guard position. But those all-star caliber guys, which Garland is, they just make such a huge difference. It's the tide that raises all the boats on a roster.
Yeah, and I will say this, you know, I think there will be some skepticism because there are point guards who put up numbers. Mm-hmm. You know, our dear friend of the pod, Cody, in our Discord, who is a Lakers fan that likes to rankle our sensibilities, will make D'Angelo Russell comparison jokes. Mm-hmm. And you know, like, and it is a good point from the perspective of like, you can put up 20-6, 20-5 as a guard in this league. You know, it's converting it into winning plays. And you know, I was actually just thinking about this from the perspective of, I don't know if you read Lowe's 10 things article. Mm-hmm. And he talked about kind of the magic of Steph Curry and, you know, the way Steph can kind of like fake people into wide open transition threes just by selling with body language and stuff. And it was just a really strong reminder to me of how much of being a good basketball player doesn't actually reside in skill set. Because a lot of players are really, really good at the skills that are good shooters, passers, dribblers, finishers. So much of going from a good player to an elite player is in those little, you know, intangible manipulations of the defense. And that is where I really think the biggest difference between the Cavs and good teams, you know, is they got a bunch of kids who haven't mastered all those little tricky things yet. Because you look at the skill sets, they're mostly pretty good. Yeah. Like the skill sets are pretty close to what you want. And you know, the archetypes that you're seeing here have all been successful, but it's when we're talking about what gets this team to the next level, it is the craft, it is the guile, it is the stuff that comes with age and experience and being a smart player. Mm-hmm. Now, not everyone gets there. Not everyone develops that kind of guile. Like not every point guard does what Steph does for a reason. Right. And it's not just that he's an alien superhero, but like said, he's a basketball genius, and there are only so many of those. But
did Disney and Marvel pay you to call him an alien superhero? Because now they're doing a little crossover.
No, but I love that. I love a good monkey see, monkey do TV copycat after the NFL Nickelodeon broadcast. That's the producer and me seeing the boardroom conversation happening. Oh, that was huge. We gotta give us one of those.
Yeah. We'll just do it bigger. The Avengers. People love
it'll
that.
It'll be Zion will be Hulk. Steph will be Hawkeye. It'll be great. Just no thought. Give me one of those. That is. I'm telling you, millions of dollars are going to be spent because someone said, "Give me one of those."
Yeah.
at the sea level at Disney. But ultimately, that's getting back to kind of our larger point. That is the difference for this team. I think the skill sets are there. I think the archetypes are there. It's now let's convert this into wins, mm-hmm. and that comes with age. That comes with experience. I think we're starting to see it. And that's kind of what I'm going to be more than looking at. That's why you should be watching the Cavs down the stretch, in my opinion, is because box score hunting at this point, box score analysis, I don't think does much for us, in terms of learning what this team is going to be doing. It's going to be all in the nitty gritty details of how is Darius manipulating the defense? How is Colin figuring out how to operate off ball? How is Jarrett kind of communicating and anchoring the defense? That's what I'm looking for as the season winds down, is because again, it's all about converting box score production into wins.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. And what gets me excited is with Garland playing at this level, with him elevating his play, now you're starting to see teams react differently. You play Miami, they put Jimmy Butler on him. You're seeing more and more wings go on him. So the fact that this is now kind of becoming the baseline for his play, I just feel like that gives him such a better idea of what to work on in the offseason and how to refine his skill set from here versus if he was working from kind of his season averages of being kind of that 18-6 guy or 17-6 guy, right? You get a different level of attention. You can learn how people are taking things away from you, and you can develop counters from there. And that just makes me more optimistic about the level he can get to by next offseason, because you see the offseason videos, he's training with Clutch, he's training with Ben Simmons, he's training with all these guys, he's working out with LeBron, Sexton is doing his workouts with Chris Paul. These guys have the right mentors. Chris Paul, Dwayne Wade for Sexton, you love to see that, but them stepping forward and taking that post All-Star break surge that we've talked about many times before, I just think that really sets them up well for success next year. And you're right. Maybe I am getting a little carried away with Garland, but as you mentioned, he's having a little bit of a moment nationally. People are starting to recognize kind of what the ceiling is, what the Cavs have built here. And as the conductor of the Garland train, I have to step up, man.
You must generate the hype, because other people will take your place if you're not careful.
I have to puff out my chest a little bit. Now that I'm feeling a little more comfortable unleashing some of those takes that have been brewing for a while, this Garland train, I got to keep it going, man. It's like when a younger player started kind of coming up to LeBron and is there going to be a passing of the torch? And he just snuffs that out. That's what I'm doing right now with Garland and all the supporters that are coming out. I welcome anybody. There is tons of room on Garland Island still. You guys can come on board, but I'm going to continue to be the conductor of this train and ride it into the future, because it is a beautiful future that the Cavs have ahead of them.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty encouraging. And, again, this is, it's funny because so many people do not feel the way we feel. There are people who are just down on this team. But, I remember what it was like post-decision 1.0. I remember. And
this ain't even, that.
Even at the best stretches, it didn't feel like we had a real direction. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, at least. And it always felt like the good stuff was these weird random occurrences. It was Kyrie, and then it was weird random occurrences that weren't indicative of anything. It was that weird bench lineup with Luke Walton that for some reason was blowing teams out of the water. It was a Kyrie Spencer Hawes pick and pop that finally looked like real offense for the first time in years. It doesn't feel like that here in Cleveland this time around. It feels like the larger direction is positive. And that's why, that's why you don't, why you kind of have to roll with some bumps, And, you know, again, I see Kelly in the chat saying, you know, Cavs roster is nasty. We got this chemistry that's off. That's why we should get rid of JB. And it's like, listen, the chemistry's fine. They really like each other. They're just kids. Mm-hmm. They're kids, and kids aren't winners in the NBA historically. Give it some time. And I know that telling the fan base, wait, is not the most exciting piece of information.
It's not a sexy message in Cleveland, right? Like, this is waiting for next year. Like, that has been
waiting for next year.
Yeah, for as long as I've been a Cavs fan, like that has always kind of been the mindset. So I understand it. I also understand.
Let me just say this.
Go ahead.
Not every problem can be fixed by a transaction. Yeah. At least a transaction that is available to you at that time. Sometimes you just gotta wait. And I understand that that is not sexy. I understand that has the mystery box appeal, right? Change always has the mystery box appeal. But like, look at the macro, look at the trends. I think things are trending up, and as a result, I am excited to stay the course and see kind of where this team takes it.
Yeah, I agree. And like, looking at comparing it to year three after the decision, one, they had more assets that time around. Like, they had way more
things
to work with.
Things went way better for them.
and it's so funny, like, because I've seen a couple people kind of have the sentiment of, well, when can we expect winning and when can we expect things to turn around? How frequently did you see, if the Cavs win a championship, if Cleveland wins a championship, I'm fine with 10, 20 years of losing? No, the cupboard went absolutely bare. They went all in as an organization to build around LeBron and give themselves as good of a chance as possible.
And it worked.
And it worked. You got a championship, and now you're 3 years away, and there's four young guys that you can get really excited about. Like, Dylan Windler right now, obviously massive setback with that surgery. You're disappointed about that. But the high picks, it looks like they hit on those guys. At the very least, those guys are not busts. They're going to be productive NBA players. But you look at year three after the decision, there like the split in the fan base. Half the fan base wanted to trade Kyrie and build around Dion and Anthony Bennett. I was on the Kyrie and Tristan train, even though everyone was sick of Tristan at that point of time. Like, there was no real belief in him. This is a totally different thing. We have four guys that we know fit well together. They play well together. They get along really well. And you're going into a loaded draft, not a bad draft like the Anthony Bennett draft, where there's a whole lot of guys that theoretically fit really well with what the Cavs have.
And again, the Cavs have not been, like, they were so lucky during that first rebuild, and it still didn't go well.
Mm-hmm.
I think the inverse has happened in this rebuild. Yeah. Like, they've been fairly unlucky. They've had bad health. Transactional trends have veered away from the direction they went just as they went them. They, you know, obviously the KPJ situation did not play out the way they were hoping.
But it was a smart gamble. It was a smart gamble.
I thought he would have fit
so well. Like that. That's... Yeah.
So like, they're making good gambles. Just things have not broken in their favor yet. People hate. It's funny. We're doing the two things fans hate the most, which is we're saying, wait, be patient. And also you also have to get results. And you also have to get lucky.
Yeah.
Like,
it's not sexy.
Like,
it really
here's the thing. Denver isn't the best organization in the world because they landed Nikola Jokic.
Mm-hmm.
In the second round. Like, it's luck. There's some luck involved there. Like, really, they took a chance, and you hope that good process begets good luck, but it doesn't mean luck doesn't matter. So, you know, ultimately, if the Cavs are really going to take an Uber leap, they're going to need to get lucky. Mm-hmm. We know that. But you know what? As long as they're trending in the right direction in the meantime, you know, I'm fine waiting, because as I just said, good process definitely helps beget good luck, even if it doesn't guarantee it.
Right, and I have confidence in the scouting and player development. Like, the guys they bring in consistently get better. The only really exceptions right now, Dylan Windler and KPJ, which those are circumstances that are not related to player development, right? Like, Dylan Windler, injuries. KPJ, off-court issues. Everybody they've brought in, including, like, they're scouting to identify a guy like Hartenstein, Dean Wade, Lamar Stevens. Like, these are guys that have got into the organization and got better since they got there. And that gives me a level of confidence when you go into a good draft with guys that make sense. Like, I just think that it is trending in the right direction. I understand trepidation when it comes to, I have to see it before I believe it. But like, I honestly think, man, like, I think there's enough reasons to objectively be excited about what this core is and what this team has going on. And like, that's what I wanted to talk about today. Like, that's what I was so excited to talk about, because with Garland looking like who I thought he was, I just feel like my read on this core has been right, and the signs are pointing towards really fun times around the corner. So I'm going to enjoy this final stretch, because I feel like this is going to be an era. I feel like this is going to be something that we look back on really fondly. And to me, there's no downside to buying in early. Like, there's absolutely none, having a little bit of faith and going along for the ride.
And if this podcast exists for anything, it's so you can pat yourself on the back when you feel like you've been right.
Buddy, when I'm right next year, I'm going to be so arrogant. It's going to be a miserable experience. You guys are going to be pining for some bad losses because, I'm just going to be, it's going to be obnoxious.
See, I told you so down.
Oh, man, it's just around the corner. I can't wait. So I'm excited to see how they do against Washington and Toronto. This season is going to wrap up in really short order, and we will continue to try to provide the best coverage possible. So I think next podcast will be Tuesday. Am I mistaken, Carter?
I didn't actually listen. I got distracted. What did you say?
Okay. Tuesday at 7 Eastern will be our Tuesday. Next podcast. Make sure you are...
Oh, you were asking when that... Yeah, Tuesday, yeah.
All right.
See you then, guys.
Make sure you guys are subscribing to the Cavs YouTube channel so that you don't miss us when we're going live, or you can watch on demand. If you are either watching on demand or watching live, make sure you like and subscribe. It helps the algorithms and helps us do better. If you are listening on podcast, make sure you leave a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there. And until next time, go Cavs.